made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Kenneth Wong is our host. He's an author, teacher, and itinerant speaker. Well, yesterday, you will recall, Ken recounted the low water crossing at Jabbok, which Jacob made, and it signified the drawing of a line between his past and his future. Well, today, Kenneth tells us about the wrestling match Jacob had with God at Peniel, and that struggle was necessary, as Augustine, an early church theologian, once suggested, because God made us for himself, and our hearts will be restless until we find our rest in him.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be with you. And I expect you would be eager to find out what's going to happen to all the preparations and the plans that Jacob had made before he crossed the Jabbok River in anticipation of the dreaded confrontation with his elder brother Esau. Will it happen according as he had planned? Will everything fall in place, or will everything fall apart? Let's move on to the second phase of this exciting episode about the midlife crisis of the man Jacob. And we'll call this second phase Peniel, after the name of a place which is mentioned in the following passage that we shall be considering. Just as we call the first phase Mahanaim, which means two hosts or two companies. Let us read on the story from Genesis chapter 32, from verse 22 through to the end of the chapter. Genesis 32, verse 22. And he arose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. And he took them, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. So on that fateful night, he had sent over everything that he had, his entire family, household, and possessions, everything apart from himself. The crossing of the ford of Jabbok, whose names you may recall means emptying or pouring out, signified this. It signified the drawing of a line between Jacob's past and his future. He was wanting to make a clean break with his past and venture over with abandon towards the unknown of the future. The way we have entered this world physically will be the same way we leave, without anything or anyone. And the sooner we realize this in life, the better. There are some things which God can do with us only when we are alone with Him, when we have divested ourselves of every other interest or confidence, whether in things or people. That was Jacob's real need then. He needed to be confronted by God alone. And that was what happened. We have read in verse 24, then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. And that man who wrestled with Jacob that night was God himself. Jacob needed to be found in the place of his greatest fear, having done all that he knew how and exhausted all his own resources and ideas. He knew this was the last thing he needed to do. He needed to face up to God and to himself. He could no longer avoid owning up and cleaning up his past mistakes and sins. And that struggle or wrestling that he experienced was a spiritual manifestation of that great conflict. For a strong-willed and scheming man like Jacob, it takes a lot to knock the common sense and conventional wisdom and the strength out of him. It was God himself that Jacob was struggling with and wrestling against. It's the struggle of self against God, of flesh against the spirit. And as Augustine, the early church theologian, famously said, Lord, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. And this great struggle that Jacob had with God was recounted by Hosea in Hosea chapter 12, verses 3 and 4. He took his brother by the heel in the womb, and in his strength he struggled with God. Yes, he struggled with the angel and prevailed. So Jacob was a tough man. He was a struggler all his life, from the time in his mother's womb when he was struggling with his twin brother Esau, till that night before crossing the Jabbok River himself, when he struggled with God till daybreak. Reading on in Genesis chapter 32 from verse 25. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he, that is God, touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint, as he wrestled with him. And he, that is God, said, "Let me go, for the day breaks." But he, that's Jacob, said, "I will not let you go, unless you bless me." This touch of God was to cripple or to wound him at his strongest point. And sometimes we fail to see that our strongest point is really our weakest point in truth. The thigh is the strongest muscular part of the body, together with the hip joint, which is the strongest joint. In crippling Jacob's thigh, God's purpose was to put an end to his incessant struggling and bring him into true rest. But still, Jacob would not let go. After self has been crippled and the striving of self has ceased, we find it replaced by a desperate and a determined clinging to God. He now knew that no one but God himself could intervene and help. And so he refused to let go of God. He said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Now he's really saying that he wanted God's favor above everything else, even Esau's favor. We see what a great contrast this was to Jacob's earlier stealing of Esau's blessing from their father Isaac, which he did through devious means. Then he sought an earthly birthright blessing through his own cunning, even if it took cheating his brother and his father. But now we find him earnestly pleading for the highest and the real spiritual blessing from God himself. Jacob could now see that no blessing can be obtained by self-striving and self-scheming. But even in this, we can still see that stubborn streak in obtaining the blessing from God at all cost, albeit now out of emptiness of self and desperation, but in dependence on God. Verses 27 and 28 represent a turning point in Jacob's life, and it was signified by a change of name from Jacob, which means supplanter or somebody who is scheming and cheating all the time, to Israel, which means prince with God. Verse 27, "So he said to him, 'What is your name?' And he said, 'Jacob.' And he said, 'Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed.'" When the question is asked, "What is your name?" it's really a query about your personal identity. It really means, who are you? And sometimes for some people, the hardest truth to face is about yourself. It's this question, "What's your name?" or "Who are you really?" It's about your true identity. And we find that this is more than just a name change or a cosmetic change. The name change was symbolic of what was a true inward change in his whole character and attitude. This was a genuine change from someone who preys on other people to one who prevails with God and prays for others. Instead of someone who is always scheming to get things from others, to gain for self at the expense of others, always like a hawk preying on other people, he's now like a dove, able to prevail with God and men, especially through prayer. The outcome of that great wrestling or struggle on that night was not so much that Jacob prevailed over God, as much as God prevailed over him. It was the day that the old Jacob had died. He was spoiled for God forever, so that he no longer walked with a strut, but with a limp. He was no longer that cocksure go-getter. Instead of that self-assurance, he had this self-abasement and humility, which was the result of God's direct dealing with him. When you want to look out for someone who can really be of use to God, look for someone who walks with a spiritual limp, not someone who walks with a strut of self, because that person has learned what it means to have no confidence in the flesh and have his full confidence in God alone. And it takes a long while for some of us to get there. And sadly for others, they never get there, because they have never allowed God to touch them at their perceived strongest point, and therefore never become sanctified. They remain a god and a law unto themselves. Reading on in verse 29, then Jacob asked, saying, tell me your name, I pray. And he said, why is it that you ask about my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose on him, and he limped on his hip. And therefore to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle that shrank, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip in the muscle that shrank. Jacob wanted to know who did it, but he was not told. You may not know exactly what happened or how it happened, but you know that something has happened to you by God, and that's good enough. He wants us to trust Him and not to place our confidence in an experience or a memory of it. So Jacob did not have a special name of God to commemorate the experience. And that's not as important as the God who did it. God blessed him there. He knew and received the blessing at God's hand when he finally surrendered to Him. So instead of having a special name of God, Jacob named the place, not the person, as a milestone in his own spiritual history. He named the place Peniel, and the meaning of Peniel is the face of God, because he had a personal encounter with God that night. He met God face to face, and yet he did not die. Instead, he was wonderfully transformed and preserved, not only in the impending crisis of having to meet up with his elder brother Esau, but thereafter for the rest of his life. He went forth from Jabbok, knowing that he would live and not die. And this is the principle of seeking God's face and prevailing in the place of prayer before heading out to meet a crisis or a storm situation. And we are reminded in the New Testament, book of Hebrews, chapter 12, verse 14, that without holiness, no one will see the Lord. So in order to see God and to hear from Him, we need to be holy. And if we are not, we need to be made holy, just like Jacob was when we come into his presence. Let's move on to the final and third phase of this episode on the midlife crisis of Jacob. And we shall call this Succoth, after the name of the place where he settled for a time. And this is in the rest of chapter 33. Chapter 33 of Genesis, verse 1. Now Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and there Esau was coming, and with him were 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. And he put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children behind, and Rachel and Joseph last. Then he crossed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. So here Jacob gave the marching orders for the 3 cohorts, from the least to the most important in his eyes. He bowed 7 times to the ground when approaching Esau. What an amazing contrast to running away from him before. Jacob was needing to face his fears, to settle accounts, and to confront his own cunning deceitfulness, as well as the one he had deceived and cheated. Sin had found him out. Well, here comes the dreaded moment and the much anticipated outcome. Verse 4, but Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children and said, who are these with you? And he said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. Then the maidservants came near, and they and their children, and bowed down. And Leah also came near with her children, and they bowed down. And afterward Joseph and Rachel came near, and they bowed down. Verse 8, then Esau said, what do you mean by all this company which I met? And he said, these are to find favor in the sight of my Lord. What a total and pleasant surprise, which was anything but what they had expected. He never could imagine or anticipate Esau's warm reception. It was way beyond his wildest dreams and hopes. And this reminds us of the parable that Jesus told of the prodigal son, when he returned home after wasting away all his inheritance on profligate living. The last thing he would expect is for his father to welcome him home with open arms and with a great big feast. This was exactly what Jacob must have felt. He was hoping just for some forgiveness, some favor from his brother, just being let off without exacting vengeance. But this, who can imagine this? Only God could have done it. Well, in looking back, or as an outsider, we see that Jacob need not have worried himself sick and resorted to scheming again had he prayed first. This happy outcome was certainly not the result of his own strategy, which could give no assurance anyway to him. In retrospect, he would understand that seeking God's face and seeing him work is the right way. As it turned out, his contingency plans were totally irrelevant and unnecessary. He worked within the limited confines of his own thinking, but God had other, better and grander ideas. Notice that the first question that Esau asked was about who. Who are these with you? And only after establishing the identity of his family members did he proceed to ask in verse 8 about the what of the presence. What do you mean by all this company which I met? To which Jacob replied, these are to find favor in the sight of my Lord. Who we are always precedes what we bring when presenting ourselves to God or others. We accept the person first before the gift, and likewise, in worship, God accepts the person first before the gift that we bring. In verse 9, Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. And Jacob said, no, please. If I have now found favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand, inasmuch as I have seen your face as though I had seen the face of God, and you were pleased with me. Please, take my blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. So he urged him, and he took it. It almost seems as if Esau was more magnanimous and generous and less covetous than Jacob in his attitude towards the bounteous gifts that he brought to him. But it's interesting to note a significant difference between the answers of Esau and Jacob, even though apparently on the surface they seem to be saying the same thing about having enough. First, in verse 9, we noted that Esau said, I have enough, my brother, keep what you have for yourself. Now that word translated enough is from the Hebrew word rab, which simply means abundant and much. In other words, Esau was saying, I have plenty, keep for yourselves. Then in verse 11, in Jacob's reply, he said, please take my blessing that is brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough. Now the same word translated in English enough is from a different word in the Hebrew. It's kol, which really means all. So unlike Esau's answer, which basically says, I have plenty, and God, Jacob's answer was, I have all. I have everything that I need, which is something that is infinitely more. The difference between plenty and everything. Now this was something Jacob could never have said before, not until God had changed him that night, when he ceased being Jacob the supplanter and became Israel, the prince who prevails. So this is not just about plenitude, but completeness. The difference is qualitative and not quantitative. Are you striving to have enough, that is to have abundance and plenty? Or are you striving to have enough, that is to be complete and full in Christ? The first may satisfy for the moment, but there is always room for more, and one can never be entirely satisfied. But the second is full, perfect, and complete. Nothing can be added or taken away from it. Jacob pleaded Esau to take the blessing. It seemed a little bit too late and too little, as if to say he had overcharged Esau 20 years ago for that bowl of red lentil stew in exchange for the birthright blessing, and it's payback time now. In a sense, it is impossible to recompense for our past sins, but for the grace of God. Verse 12, Esau said, let us take our journey, let us go, and I will go before you. But Jacob said to him, my Lord knows that the children are weak and the flocks and herds which are nursing are with me. And if the men should drive them hard one day, all the flock will die. So Jacob made an excuse to avoid being detained by Esau. His sole purpose was to settle accounts, to seek favor, and to be reconciled. He could, in fact, have avoided Esau altogether, bypassing Edom. But Jacob needed to come to terms with his blotted past and make amends. He needed to make peace with Esau and with himself, and restitution with the one he had wronged. Otherwise, his future will forever be haunted by his past and clouded by his sin. His sin and his scheming nature will continue to hound him for the rest of his days. Now here in verse 17, we come across the name Succoth, which I have taken for the subtitle for this phase. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth, built himself a house, and made booth for his livestock. Therefore the name of the place is called Succoth, which literally means booths. We see that for the first time, Jacob had real rest, and he was able to settle in a place of his own. After years of running and slogging away and squatting in a foreign land in somebody else's farm, he was free at last because he was free from sin and from self. He did not go south to Seir or Edom as he said he would to Esau, but rather he went northwest to Shechem. Verse 18, Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. When he came from Paddan Aram, and he pitched his tent before the city. And in the last verse of chapter 33, in verse 20, we read, then he erected an altar there and called it El Elohi Israel, which literally means God, the God of Israel, signifying that at last he had a personal history of having proven God. He could now call him the God of Jacob or Israel, his new name, and not only addressed him as God of Abraham and the God of Isaac. He settled there as it was fertile for herds, and he bought land and erected that altar to remind himself of the God who transformed Jacob the schemer to Israel the prince who prevailed. But he was still minding his flock somewhere else instead of returning to Bethel as he had vowed 20 years earlier. And if you compare this with the earlier pillar that he erected, which he named Bethel, the house of God, you find that this was but a step on the way back fully, and it was only some years later when he finally returned and built the altar called El Bethel, or the God of the house of God. And we read of this in Genesis chapter 35, verse 7. But over this long process and period, we see a great and fundamental change had taken place in the person of Jacob. His focus had moved beyond the house of God as something to the God himself who is over this house. And perhaps God may want to do this for you too, to wean you from a preoccupation with things, no matter how good or spiritual they may be, to the God of those things, so that you do not have to scheme and struggle your way through life, but rest and work with him. And may the Lord's presence continue to refresh you and his word reach you.
The God who changed Jacob the schemer is the same God that will change us to the likeness of Jesus. Thank you for that word, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow for another reflection from God's Word. Right now, though, we would love to hear from you, and here are several ways through which you can be in contact. You can send us a text message, 9431-3813. Or you can write to us, Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore, 915-714. You can go to our Facebook page and get the latest updates. You can give us your views right on our Facebook page. You can also visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, to listen to this program or any of the others in the library. Also, Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app, so while you're online, why don't you take the time to download that app, and you can then have access to all of the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from your iPhone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.